This is Radio Influence.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top.
Wow.
And here comes as a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
On the eve of the big game, the UFC will hold a fight card on FS1, and it will be the return of the Korean Zombie as he is going to step inside the UFC octagon for the first time since 2013, a 1,281-day layoff, as he is going to meet Dennis Bermudez in a featherweight matchup. And, of course, this fight card also has several key matchups in women's strawweight division, including Jessica Andrade versus Angela Hill, Alexa Grasso versus Felice Herrig, and Tisha Torres versus Beck Rollins. Of course, myself and Daniel Galvan are going to break down this fight card. Also, we're going to answer some questions and comments that were submitted to us via social media as we get you ready for UFC Houston or UFC Fight Night 104, Bermudez versus Jung, or whatever you want to call this fight card. We're going to preview here on this edition of the MMA Report Preview Podcast. Of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight TV is your number one source for MMA boxing and pro wrestling video. The Fight app is your wrestling, MMA, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. Download Fight free today by going to Fight. FITE.TV/radio influence/. Once again, that is Fight. FITE.TV/radio influence/. Of course, you can always check out this show on radioinfluence.com. Also available iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. And iTunes and Stitcher, it's really just simple. Just search the MMA Report and you can find that. Speaking of Radio Influence, two new brand new shows have debuted. Duffify Live with Chef Brian Duffy. You may remember Brian from his days on Bar Rescue. On episode one, he is joined by Bar Rescue alum Michael Tipps, who is a mixologist. Those two guys talk about the various aspects of the bar and restaurant industry, so you definitely want to check that out. Also, Ian Beckel, somebody that I worked with in terrestrial radio, he has also joined the Radio Influence lineup. You can check out his show. As on his first episode, he was joined by one of his former teammates, Tony Mayberry, who played center for Tampa Bay Buccaneers and made three Pro Bowls. So you definitely want to check out that. But first off, let's bring in Daniel Galvan, who is in the state of Texas. Daniel, are you excited for UFC Fight Night 104 on Saturday?
I'm excited for a single fight. That's the way I'm looking at it, man. I mean, I can't wait to watch Alexa Grasso compete again. She's an incredible talent. But to me, Saturday UFC is literally all about the main event. There are some nice things, especially on the prelims, that I can get behind. But there's just a significant gap between what we got and then what we got in the main event for two reasons. This is literally the epitome of a crossroads fight. It's in the main event. I'm so excited. Bermudez tends to have trouble against the quote-unquote elite featherweights, although he does have the win over the champion. But it's not like a money in the bank, Dennis. You can't just cash it in. And then Chan Sung Jung, I mean, I have no idea what to expect out of a guy who has not competed for 3 years. Obviously, he's you know, served in the Korean Army. He was injured. So I think I'm excited, Jason, because not only is the main event a very good fight, it is also a crossroads fight for both guys.
Yeah, I mean, I love the way you bring it up with Chan Sung Jung. You know, I'm not sure if we talked about this on the last preview podcast or, you know, a podcast recently where we talked about, you know, one of the hardest things about predicting a fight is more about the unknowns, and that's kind of what it is with Chan Sung Jung. I will tell you, to me, you know, there's a couple of fights or fighters that have me interested on this fight card. One of the things that it baffles me about the UFC here. And I think we both know why Alexa Grasso versus Felice Herrig is a co-main event. But really, the co-main event of this fight card should be Jessica Andrade versus Angela Hill. And the reason it should be the co-main event is because of Jessica Andrade. Everyone that I have talked to, the firm expectations is Jessica Andrade wins this fight. It's going to be announced. If it's not on Saturday night, very shortly, that she is going to be next up for Joanna Jędrzejczyk for the UFC women's strawweight title. But we both know why Alexa Grasso and Felice Herrig are the main event, co-main event, and it really has nothing to do with how they are as fighters. It's how they look.
No, that's literally 100% true. That's crazy when you really think about it, because, like, I don't think here's the thing. No one is going to watch there is not going to be a greater amount of people that tune into UFC Fight Night if Grasso Herrig is the main event, co-main event, instead of Andrade Angela Hill. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel so why even put yourself in a position where you are clearly making it totally known that you care about looks in an athletic competition? Like, that is patently clear. The only other case you could make is Alexa Grasso is a rising star and you want to build her up. But, like, Jessica Andrade in 2017 is the star in terms of if she wins, she will compete for the title. Thus, honestly, her fight is literally the most important fight on the card in terms of the landscape of the UFC. I mean, obviously, Chan Sung Jung is the type of fighter that you can just main event time and again. But Jessica Andrade is quite literally a victory away from contending for a title. So, I mean, you could make the case that she deserves to be in the main event. Obviously, I understand the Korean Zombie being in the main event, that is a bit more marketable. But, I mean, why not throw her on the co-main event? With all of that being said, like, the one benefit I would assume of opening up the card with Andrade and Angela Hill is if you have somebody tuning in the beginning of the FS1 main card, that is in all likelihood going to be an incredibly exciting fight, because I anticipate Andrade to keep up the volume with Angela Hill trying to counter-strike there. I mean that is a really, really good under-the-radar fight. The unfortunate thing is, as soon as you watch that fight, Jason, the viewer is going to have to pay a tax, and that tax is called watching Anthony Hamilton, Marcel Fortuna, OSP, Volkan Ozdemir.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the UFC and FS1, you're kind of hoping that that Hamilton Fortuna fight ends up being a fight that, you know, it ends in the first round with a stoppage there. You know, OSP against Volkan Ozdemir. You know, I talked about it on the post fight podcast. Yeah, we always like to play that game. Who's going to miss weight? Because more times than not, someone's going to miss weight. And I said, Volkan Ozdemir was the guy I was going with, and the whole reason it was is because I spoke to him prior. To his scheduled Titan fight, I talked to him about a week and a half before that Titan fight. He was going to fight for the vacant heavyweight title. Ultimately, his opponent ends up getting a staph infection and doesn't get a card, and now he gets this opportunity. And he told me, I said, well, you know, you fought at 205, you're fighting heavyweight. And he told me, he said, you know, my days at light heavyweight are not necessarily over. I said, but how much are you weighing? He goes, I'm about 240 pounds. I'm like, and right when he took that fight, I was like, oof, man, that's a lot of weight to lose in about 2.5 weeks.
That is some insider trading information by you, Jason. That is.
Are you saying it's not? Are you saying I had a little advantage on you in who you're picking?
Yeah, because I literally don't know who to pick in our little game where we pick who misses weight. I mean, last week, Marcos Rogério de Lima was the lucky ticket. I would not have anticipated that one. And if I give you Volkan, I mean, I'm going to be nice and give it to you. Honestly, I shouldn't give it to you. It's not fair. Okay, you crooked media, you're always in taking all this information. But, you know, my counter is not a good counter. It is a shot in the dark. But I'm going to go with I'm going to go with Abel Trujillo. Now, he has never missed weight, to my knowledge. But
he's a pretty big 155er.
Yeah. I mean, James Vick is tall for sure. But I think it's also because I don't like what Abel Trujillo, like his history outside the cage. So I'm not really rooting for the guy too much, right? Like, so that's who I would go with. I mean, there really isn't. Is when you look top to bottom, you take away your BS information on Volkan. Who sticks out to you as someone with a history of missing weight? I feel like there's no one that comes to mind here.
No, there's no one that comes to mind here at all. Yeah, it's you know, you always go ahead.
Has the weight cut been easy for Andrade every time?
Yeah, I mean, she's only 5'2". She was a really small 135er. And she's probably, I think, you know, you look at certain fighters in the UFC that I think 125 would probably be the probably ideal weight class for her. But, you know, in terms of Joanna and Jacek, it's probably the one fight I'd want to see. And here's a side note on a potential matchup between Andrade and Jacek. You know, Jacek got rid of her manager late last year. And that manager now represents Jessica Andrade.
That is juicy. That should be a part of a UFC fight high. I mean, that's
good. Yeah. It should definitely be a part of it. Even though, you know, you'd much rather manage Joanna and Jacek. Let's just be honest about it, because the chance to make more money off Joanna and Jacek is much higher than Jessica Andrade.
No. I think you want to manage Nina Ansaroff, because she's the best fighter at American Top Team, Daniel Cormier. In that fight, I would imagine Joanna Jędrzejczyk will be a pretty big favorite. I mean, that fight sounds awesome. Andrade and Jędrzejczyk, I feel like that fight literally has the possibility to break a record in terms of most strikes landed. It probably won't, but I could certainly see that happening. But Angela Hill is listening to this podcast, and she's saying, guys, why are you counting me out? I went to Invicta. I looked great. I believe I am the champion. And I'm just trying to collect my belts, and I'm looking to upset Andrade. I feel like while Jessica Andrade is very much the pick here, Jason, given the way she kind of looked so dominant against real top women strawweight veterans, Angela Hill has showcased like an incredible amount of improvement in her game after she after her initial UFC foray kind of came to a conclusion. Angela Hill's talent level has definitely jumped up big time. I think she's a live dog here.
Yeah, no, and this could be a tough matchup for Jessica Andrade, but I think ultimately she's going to get the win. But before we start getting into these fights, there were a couple of questions that we got that were related to this fight card, but not necessarily about the fights. And the first one comes from @Justin8S on Twitter, saying, why did they not have Derek Lewis versus Travis Brown headline this card, given Derek Lewis fights out of Houston? And that's a very good, you know, thought there. You know, obviously with them being in the host city of the Super Bowl, that it's, you know, drawing people is not going to be an issue. You know, it's not like you're, you know, if the Super Bowl was not in Houston, I think having Derek Lewis on this car would have made a lot of sense. But, you know, it seemed that, you know, based on some of the things Derek Lewis had said, I think he kind of wanted an extra week or two to get back in there. But I totally understand. But this is the other side of it, is the UFC needs main events. And, you know, and they had to turn to Derek Lewis and Travis Brown when JDS and then the Stefan Struve fight got scratched.
Yeah, I think that's honestly the answer. I mean, it's all about timing. There is something just, you know, when I think of the zeitgeist, like people that have the ability to conjure the zeitgeist, and the zeitgeist is definitely in play here in Houston, right? It's Super Bowl weekend. If something remarkable happens on Saturday, I feel like that could get a lot of play. And I feel like Derek Lewis is just such a good person to capitalize on momentum. Obviously, you're a big fan of his social media. He's a big time puncher. So the idea of him on Saturday going out there and potentially piecing together a highlight reel knockout or something, and then having a enjoyable post fight interview and dominant headlines, that's a high probability. And that's probably what they should have gone with the benefit of hindsight and the ability to prepare another substitute for that 105 fight night. But I think he answered the question, Jason. It's really all about timing. I'm sure Travis Brown wasn't going to jump to sign that contract either. I'm sure he wasn't like, oh, can't wait to fight in my opponent's hometown. But that does bring questions in terms of, is there some type of statistical analysis that you can look at and point to and say, if you fight in your hometown, you're more likely to win? I would imagine slightly. But it would have been a nice moment for Derek Lewis to fight there, because – when you do think of like just fighters across every single division that have just fountains and fountains of charisma and personality, Derek Lewis is undoubtedly at the very, very top of that list.
So you're telling me that you did not watch Derek Lewis on MMA Hour on Monday?
No. I don't have 5 hours every Monday.
Well, I usually just go back and listen to the interviews I want to hear. But, okay. You know, Ariel asked me, he said, hey, you know, last time we had you on, you kind of mentioned you want to take some time off. So, you know, quick turnaround here. What kind of happened here? He goes, oh, manager called me when I was drunk. And I just said, someone wants to fight me. All right, I'll do it. You know, and then of course that the follow up to that is the interview that Travis Brown did with Brett Okamoto that it's just unbelievable. I just to sit there and call Edmund Terverdian you know the way he raves about him like I'm like oh my god I just don't get it I don't get it.
it's like a parent. Who knows their child has misbehaved publicly talking about how nice of a child it is. Your kid sucks, Sally. I don't get it. But at the end of the day, Jason, it's more than just words. I assume Travis Brown is paying Edmund money to train him in the sport of mixed martial arts. That may be the most asinine thing than anything he could possibly say is the action of literally investing time in like your mixed martial arts career is a limited resource. You only have a period of time where you can compete at a high level, and both him and Ronda Rousey have deemed that they should spend a significant portion of their career in his training camp. And I feel like that is a gamble that will not pay off. It's like playing with a slot machine with the 5% chance of winning. I don't get it, Jason. And the thing is, with all that being said, if he comes out there and he just runs through Derek Lewis, I think the narrative slightly changes. But geez, if Travis Brown is finished in the first round, doesn't look competitive, striking looks sloppy. I mean, at what point, how many poor performances can we see out of that camp before there is some type of consequences?
Yeah, it just amazed me that someone would want to go there. I mean, Travis has gone. He has been training in Las Vegas and said that, you know, Edmund will still be in his corner. And ultimately the reason that he's training in Vegas is that just has more bodies, which, I mean, that's totally understandable. But another question we got, this is from at WWE Big Show Fan 6, Christian, saying Holmes' name could have gotten the UFC a lot of mainstream coverage. 208 should have been in Houston and on Fox. Big mistake by the UFC. Now, I understand where Christian's coming there, but Christian, here's the problem. The NFL Honors is on Fox on Saturday night, and you're not putting a UFC card over that.
Yeah, you could do a live stream of Andy Dalton eating a bucket of ice cream, and it would probably outdraw a mixed martial arts card. I'm sorry. It's just simply true. The Pro Bowl, the numbers the Pro Bowl does is crazy given the content. So,
did I see it was 7 million?
Was it 7 million?
I think I saw someone mention that on on social media. By the way, you know what also I found very interesting about social media, and particularly on Facebook? I noticed this last week, and I really started seeing much more of this. Access TV was actually putting the CES fights on live via Facebook Live. I also saw the NBA D-League is...
I work for the D-League, and they do that. They move everything to Facebook.
It's interesting, though. Is that just kind of... Are certain media companies kind of getting ahead of the curve and realizing that, you know what, hey, this is a way to get out there because there are people who have cut the cord.
Yeah, the viewership total for the D-League games, at least the ones I work for, the Vipers, I mean, they are up because they do the Facebook Live, and it's largely due to the fact that, you know, their initial thing was YouTube, but the thing is, man, the amount of people in your daily life that are on Facebook all day long, just it's become a habit. So it makes so much sense to put your Facebook Live right there. So when someone's scrolling through their timeline, they got you. You're in their timeline. And not only that, Facebook is very selfish. So they're going to, if you post something, you upload directly to Facebook or you broadcast live, they're going to put you up on their feed much higher. That's how the algorithm works. Much higher than if you share a YouTube video. So I would imagine, I don't know how ahead of the curve it is anymore, because I think everyone's doing it now. I mean, not everyone, excuse me, but most people realize that it is a smart move because, I mean, you see more people engaging on their telephones at a bar, at a restaurant, than you do looking at the screen. And, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I do... You know who was ahead of the curve was the freaking UFC with their Facebook prelims. They did it before the app, before people were watching things on there, and it was functionable, right? You had a. I feel like they feel like, man, we really thought about this ahead of time, but the infrastructure just wasn't there.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just, it's interesting to me to kind of see how people are doing that, you know, and, you know, it's, you know, and I'm guilty of it, of always, you know, looking at my Facebook timeline, even though right now, sometimes I just try to ignore it. It's too much political talk on there.
Well, the thing is, Jason, I don't think it's going to end anytime soon. Because we elected Donald Trump, so I feel like the Facebook, and maybe that is going to be the biggest thing that's going to affect Facebook. I always wondered what was going to, because everything ebbs and flows. So I think people getting sick of each other, because obviously you have two divisive political parties. I think that may be the one thing that takes down Facebook, is people don't want to look at it anymore because all they see is divisive, politics, and also. Girls that turn them down in high school with really attractive guys. That's my problem. You're worried about the politics. I'm worried about, all the girls. I slid into their DMs and you know, they're hanging out guys with six packs, and all I got is a UFC Fight Pass subscription.
Yeah, it's interesting, but obviously with NFL honors on Fox, they could have done that. But if Fox didn't have some specialty program on Saturday night, oh yeah, no question, this should have been the Fox card, no doubt about it. I mean, but you know, as we've said already, I mean, the reason you are tuning in for this fight card is for the main event of Chan Sung Jung and Dennis Bermudez, and you know, it's the UFC sends out these quotes, and there was one quote that I highlighted from Dennis Bermudez where he says this quote: "After I win here, realistically, I would like to fight Max Holloway. I have a win over him. He has the interim belt. That's the reason I signed up to be in the UFC, is to be a world champion." That's Dennis Bermudez. Now, look, I understand why he says that, but, you know, realistically, come on, Dennis Bermudez, you're not getting a title shot with a win here.
No, that is not a thing that is happening, largely due to the fact that with a win, Bermudez's win streak spans Tatsuya Kawajiri, Hani Jason, Chan Sung Jung, and there are so many guys above him on the rankings. Look, Bermudez is in a nice spot where if he does win another fight, he has the win over Holloway to claim.
Yeah, I mean, no question, Holloway is by far his best win in the UFC. But what's number two?
I was thinking about that, actually, and my answer would probably be Tatsuya Kawajiri when you really look at the list.
You wouldn't go Clay Guida?
No, because, I mean, 2014 Clay Guida is not as good as, like, 2007 Clay Guida. I mean, look, Clay Guida is probably a counterpoint. I think you look at Kawajiri, you look at Guida, you circle those two, and then I do think you have a pretty big job. I mean, the win over Jimmy Hedges was a bit more impressive at the time, but it's crazy, man, when you really do analyze, because Bermudez pieced together such a nice win streak after losing on the Ultimate Fighter finale. But when push comes to shove, I mean, the only real impressive name on that win list is Max Holloway. I mean, and you're talking about a fighter who has won, I want to say, if he wins here, that'll be his 10th UFC victory.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to remember that, you know, that Max Holloway win was back in 2013. You know, that was when he fought Max Holloway. It was just a couple months later where Chan Sung Jung had his last fight, which was that loss to Jose Aldo. And one of the questions that we got in related to this matchup, because I think there was definitely a lot of people out there that when this fight was announced, I was kind of like, wow, no easy tune-up fight for Chan Sung Jung coming back for the first time since 2013. And this is, once again, the question from Christian. He says, "Is this matchup fair to Zombie after a layoff? I think it's going to be a beating." And Chan Sung Jung kind of talked about that to the media earlier this week, where he said this, quote, "It's really good to be back, and it's really nice to see all the people came out to support us. I don't know exactly what is going to happen once we get in the octagon, but I think we can always expect an exciting fight. There are no easy fights in the UFC. Everyone is tough. So I'm going to come back. I might as well fight the toughest guy I can so I can get back to my road to championship contention as quick as possible. So that was Chan Sung Jung pretty much saying, sign me up. I mean, but you do kind of wonder if you were in the management of Chan Sung Jung of, you know, why not give him a tune-up fight before you have him fight a top 10 guy?
Well, I tell you what, I think Chan Sung Jung is the type of fighter that isn't a fan of tune-up fights. That's just a suspicion I have. And the reason why is, you know, time is of the essence, Jason. I mean, this is a guy who has not competed in 3 years. He's nearly 30. So maybe he thinks every single time he fights in the cage, he wants the fight to matter. But if you're in his management, I do think you would do your fighter so much justice to give him a tune-up fight, because at the end of the day, his most impressive win outside of Dustin Poirier, you're talking about fighters that are retired or should be. I mean, you're talking about the win over Lennon Garcia, Mark Hominick. That's about it. And he certainly needs to, that's why I feel confident in picking Dennis Bermudez, is we haven't seen Jung fight since August 2013 back at UFC 163. I mean, that's way back when John Lineker only missed weight for the second time. Think about how long that was. I don't know how someone can pick Chan Sung Jung and then go to sleep at night feeling confident about it. I mean, he has displayed incredible skills. He is so well-rounded, but it just comes down to the known quantity versus the great unknown quantity.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of unknowns, and I'm not really confident in going in either side of this fight. It has been a long time since we've seen the Korean Zombie, and that does make it tough because you don't know what type of fighter he's going to look like. You know, it's February of 2017. It was August of 2013 the last time we saw him. But I'm going to go the Korean Zombie in this one. I think he pulls off the victory.
I can't blame you. No, you shouldn't feel confident. You shouldn't sleep with your both eyes closed. You should feel real, real nervous about it. But I feel real, real nervous about picking Dennis Bermudez. And it's all about the upside of Chan Sung Jung. I think what you look here is you have massive, massive upside with Jung. Just a hellacious striker. And obviously, when you go and you look back at the way he tapped out Lennon Garcia, slick grappler. So the upside is there. The downside is also fairly massive in terms of performance against a top 10 featherweight, given the downtime. And I would assume when he's I wish I had read an article about what he did in the 2 years in the military, but I do wonder how much time he was able to spend just training. I would assume not a lot.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely the big question. But, you know, one of the questions that we got, this came from at C. Henson 149 Casey, asked for our opinion about which betting props you like for some of the fights, not just the win-lose, but also over-under, sub, KO, by decision, fight goes to distance, doesn't go to distance, etc. We're going to kind of answer this question throughout. I've labeled out six prop bets that I looked at, and it's more based on the odds. When it comes to the main event, I wrote two of them down. First up, the under 2.5 rounds. I don't think this fight, I think it's over within the first, 8 or 9 minutes. I think it's going to be, I don't see it going 25 minutes. So I like that. It's plus 180. And the Korean Zombie by TKO or KO at plus 646. I like that line as well.
I can see what you're picking up. I mean, that's a line that I would have written down had you not said it, because I think that's what you're – I think when there's a high probability of a gap in fighter performance, there you have an under. And when you look at plus 180, that is pretty juicy, Jason. I like what you're saying there. In terms of any – there isn't a prop bet that sticks out to me. I would stay away from it. But maybe fight is not a draw at minus 18,500. Feel pretty good about it. But honestly, if there's anything that sticks out, I tend to keep my eyes towards things that are plus whatever. And under 2.5 rounds actually vibes what I think as well, just because despite the fact that Bermudez has a lot of decisions under his belt and Jung is literally nicknamed the Korean Zombie, he's hard to finish. the idea of this one going three rounds is hard to imagine, just given the likelihood of just a real quick finish early on in the fight. So I like both of what you're saying there. I mean, if you're picking Jung, I guess the idea is he hasn't missed a beat. And if he hasn't missed a beat, I think there's a pretty strong potential for a finish.
Now, the co-main event of this fight card is a women's strawweight matchup we talked about earlier of why this is a co-main event. Alexa Grasso and Felice Herrig. Felice Herrig had this to say earlier this week in Houston. Quote, "I was really excited for this fight, this matchup. I think I'm in a good place mentally and physically. I think styles make fights, and I'm at a point in my career where I want to put on fun and exciting fights for the fans, and I want to put on fights that people are excited for and are pumped up about. I'm really pumped up. I think it'll be fight of the night, and I think it'll be fun to watch," end of quote. Daniel, isn't your goal to put on fun and exciting fights every time you fight?
No.
Am I wrong in saying that?
Yes, you are. Because I've got Darren Elkins online, and he wants to tell you that the goal is to lay and pray, baby, lay and pray. No, I mean, it's cliche times 1,000, is it not? I mean, here's another statistical analysis. If a fighter only talks in cliches, is she or he more likely to win or lose? I have serious, serious questions about it. I mean, this is going to be hard for Felice, Jason. It really is. And I feel bad for her because when you look at her track record, the UFC is basically telling her that you're the B-side in all these fights. I mean, Paige VanZant, Kaylin Curran continue. I mean, it's like a 55-year-old real estate developer having to teach a 21-year-old real estate developer about the business, knowing that that 21-year-old's in there to replace her. I mean, poor Felice. Put her on the A-side, UFC. Because this is clean cut. If Herrig wins, that would be a massive upset. That's kind of why I feel confident about, you know, my first prop bet will be Alexa Grasso winning by decision at 105, because Felice is tough. But, I mean, this is clearly Grasso's fight, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we always talk about the path to victory for a fighter. And to me, it's clear in this fight, the path to victory for Felice Herrig to get this fight to the ground. That's where I think it can become very interesting. But if this fight's on the feet, it's Alexis Grasso will just, I believe, will outpoint her and we'll get a 15-minute decision here. You know, and Felice Herrig is one of those fighters that I just wonder if she gets a loss here, is this the last time she fights?
I could certainly see that because, I mean, Felice has done a nice job even before the UFC, of really having a lot of cooks in the kitchen in terms of working in other parts of the entertainment industry. So I feel like for Felice, that's a strong likelihood. I mean, she's the type of fighter where if she wins, I wouldn't be surprised if she calls it a day. But with the loss, I actually think we would see her return to the cage. But if she steps away, it would make a lot of sense. It's just that, again, It does seem like the sky is parting for Alexa Grasso. Every time she fights, it's almost an event. It would be an event if she was able to finish fights, but the inability to finish fights probably hurts her just a tad bit in terms of fight hype. But I hope that it's not like an emotional decision, a rash decision, because like most fighters that are fighting in this division, if matched up with Alexa Grasso, are going to lose because Grasso's striking is just dynamite, especially the punching part of it. And she also is pretty well-rounded, and she shows real nice improvement in multiple facets. So Alexa Grasso's the pick here, and I do hope that a loss doesn't really dictate Felice's career, just given that literally most people not named Joanna Jędrzejczyk would lose to Alexa Grasso.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Grasso is a promising prospect for the UFC, and obviously, you know, she is a part of that plan internationally to help grow it down there in Mexico and in Latin America. So it's I just The only way Herrera can win this fight, she gets a fight to the ground. I mean, both of her UFC wins are by submission, so we'll see what happens there. But obviously, the strawweight matchup that has me the most interested on this fight card. I mean, honestly, I would tell you, Grasso Herrera, of the three strawweight bouts on this fight card, that would be the number three strawweight bout on this card, for me at least. I'm sure there's plenty of people that maybe Grasso Herrera is a fight they're more interested in. I mean, to me, I'm more interested in Torres Rawlings than I am Grasso Herrera, but, you know, Jessica Andrade and Angela Hill definitely is a fight that has me interested. And obviously, you know, Jessica Andrade has everything to lose in this fight in terms of, you know, a title shot that likely is sitting there. I mean, you know, she was right there in line for a title shot if she wanted it even before taking this fight, but she does take this fight. And it's interesting, this is the 10th UFC fight for Jessica Andrade. It's the most by any female in UFC history, and I just think it's going to be her volume that is going to be the key for her to victory here. But in terms of one of those prop bets that kind of jump out to me, I'm not saying that I think she's necessarily going to win by TKO or KO. I think, you know, it's more likely that the path to victory will come by decision, but Andrade by TKO KO plus 465. You're a betting person. I think that's a fight a prop bet you should look at.
Oh, plus 465. That's juicy. That's juicy. Like a nice steak. I like that a lot, actually. I think Angela Hill does have the ability to, if she's patient and cautious and able to weather the storm, her stand up and her movement are at a pretty nice level to counter. With all that being said, Andrade is clearly the pick. That is crazy. This is going to be her 10th fight, you said?
Yeah, 10th UFC fight.
Wow. This is definitely the coming out party for Jessica Andrade. What gives me a reservation is every single time, I believe, we see this in the UFC, where one fighter is a win away from a title shot and the other fighter is a win away from, like, asking for a title shot and not getting it. I feel like there's always a spoiler. Every time we have these title contender bouts where only one fighter can actually win a shot at the title, I feel like the MMA gods have their way with the UFC and you know, conjure up an upset. But I do think Angela Hill, again, at plus 415 is a bit too much because I feel like there's a lot of value in maybe a lot of people not catching up to what she's added to her game. I mean, this fight to me is closer, but it's hard to pull the trigger and take Angela Hill when you look at the way Andrade has just ran through the division.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about, you know, one of the storylines, you know, really the past couple of years is fighters moving weight classes, and typically it's fighters going up in weight. But Jessica Andrade was a small 135er. She cuts down to 115, and since cutting down to 115, she scored a TKO win over Jessica Penne and then a submission win over Joanne Calderwood back at UFC 203. I mean, you're talking about, you know, Penne has challenged Joanna Jędrzejczyk for the title. And of course, Calderwood's, you know, been right there. Kind of, you've always been kind of waiting for that moment with her where she was going to get a win or two that was going to put her in title contention. But I think this will be Jessica Andrade. But it's not an easy fight for her. I mean, it's a tough fight. And Angela Hill has improved a lot, you know, since her first stint in the UFC. And we'll be interested to see in that one. You know, you mentioned a little bit about Abel Trujillo and James Vick. You know, James Vick, very tall for the 155-pound weight class. I think that this is a fight that I think will end up being a potential fight of the night. Just because I think stylistically it's going to be a fight that likely plays out on the feet.
Yeah, I think a big part of that idea has to come down to Abel Trujillo's fighting style, Jason. I mean, he is the one that pushes the pace, that is exciting, that has power. And under the radar, I mean, the DQ win wasn't really a win for him over Gleison Tibau. But, I mean, you look at the Tony Sims victory, the Jordan Rinaldi victory. He has won back-to-back fights. He is exciting. With that being said, James the Texecutioner Vic, great nickname. I think what you got to like about James Vic is the spacing he has with his striking. And I think that's going to come into play here. With all that being said, when you look up and down James Vic's record in the UFC, it looks nice on paper when you see 5-1. Still, there is a huge, huge, huge gap between his most impressive win and what we believe the talent level of Abel Trujillo is. So I don't feel good about it, but I'm going to go with James Vick. Still, the more entertaining this fight is, the more likely I think Abel Trujillo is going to win it, because that's the type of fight he would like, a fight that keeps Vick off balance and really plays into his hand to land power.
Well, let's not forget about Abel Trujillo. His only loss in the UFC, Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would also say T-Bow was a loss. Like, yeah, I know he won, but he got tapped out by Gleison, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I mean, officially, it goes down as a DQ. But when you're talking about the level,
what's your favorite victory, not including Gleison T-Bow?
Whew, man. I mean, you know, just in terms of how it went, I mean, you look at that Jamie Varner fight back at UFC 169, but I mean, obviously that's not Jamie Varner of, you know, of the WEC, you know, but I look at James Vick and, you know, the Jake Matthews is a nice win. You know, I think that I look at the level of competition. I like Abel Trujillo in this matchup.
Yeah, I think what we've learned doing all these pre-fight shows is no one has an impressive win on their resume.
Especially, like, you look at guys who've been around the UFC forever. You know, you kind of go, man, who's their best win?
Yeah, yeah. You're like, this guy has been around since, you know, 2010. I feel like he certainly has four or five great wins. But this sport is brutal to every single fighter, man, because usually the ways their careers end is not particularly fun.
Okay, so speaking of fighters' resumes and their best victory, we got OSP Volkanovski. Okay, OSP. Now, by the way, I mean, OSP, you know, he's lost back-to-back fights. John Jones and Jimmy Manawa lost three of his last four. The other loss of Glover Teixeira, his only win his last four fights came against Rafael Cavalcante. Back nearly 1 year ago to date, February 6, 2016. Who is Ovince St. Preux's best win? I guess you have to go Shogun, but it's not exactly like that's the prime Shogun.
Yeah. I would go Nikitai Krylov, which at the time did not look very impressive because he tapped him out with Von Fluchuk. But, I mean, either him or Shogun, and then it's like a huge, huge drop down to your Cody Donovans, right? Like,
yeah, I mean,
it's true.
You think when you look at OSP's resume, every time he's had that step up in competition, it's a loss. Ryan Bader, Glover Teixeira, John Jones, Jimmy Manawa. But I kind of feel like this is – I think in a way this is kind of a dangerous fight for OSP because it's a short-notice fight. But then you're taking on a guy who is preparing for a heavyweight matchup. Now he's coming down to 205, so you have to wonder, you know, just you have to imagine that it's going to be a tough weight cut regardless when you're trying to lose that much weight to get down to 205 pounds. How much will that potentially affect Volkan Ozdemir? And maybe the early weigh-ins kind of helps him with that to give him the extra recovery time. But, you know, when it comes to Volkan Ozdemir, I think a lot of people will ultimately remember him in Bellator, you know, when he was a part of a light heavyweight tournament there and ultimately gets tapped out via Kelly Anderson. He has won back-to-back fights here, and, you know, and one of those prop bets I like here is OSP by submission at plus 400.
I think you have real value in taking fighters like this who maybe didn't anticipate a fight in the UFC so quickly, have a lot of things to worry about outside of the skill set, like cutting weight. And so to parlay that into a prop bet is a nice strategy. I feel like OSP is due for like a weird loss. I don't think this is the time. And I think simply put, I mean, you talking to him about cutting so much weight, OSP's, you know, ability to win fights against guys without Wikipedia articles, stuff like that makes me feel real confident. But, yeah, the submission, a lot of my prop bets are really not on the main card, but OSP to me is certainly the pick. And I think if you feel so confident about a guy, you might as well prognosticate what the finish is. And I could see a finish. You're right. The submission probably is the most likely, probably not a Von Fluchuk, though.
Probably not of Von Fluchuk, but I do like Ovince St. Preux. In that matchup, Anthony Hamilton, Marcel Fortuna. I'm not confident in my pick here, but I'm going to say Anthony Hamilton by knockout in the first round.
Yeah. No one's confident about their pick here. And I concur with what you're saying. Especially the way of finish, I don't feel confident about it. I could very much see a boring three-round fight. But for the sake of everybody watching, I hope this one ends early. Anthony Hamilton, to me, is the pick. I mean, he's just established himself even before the UFC. That's really where a lot of my love for Hamilton comes from, although he has had some boring fights. That's where he showcased the most skill, I think. And Hamilton is the pick here. I mean, this is the fight that sticks out like a sore thumb on this main card of, like, oh, there are several preliminary bouts that are more and more compelling than this one.
Yeah, I will tell you, in the prelim bout that has me the most interested, and it's a fight booking that I'm still scratching my head about. I don't understand why you put two young American heavyweights against each other. In Adam Milstead and Curtis Blaydes. I mean, when I did an interview with Adam Milstead, which you can check out on the AmeriPort.com, I even asked him that same question. I go, hey, man, were you surprised by this? And he said, yeah. He goes, it is kind of a weird matchup. He goes, you know, basically, essentially saying that he thought that this matchup would probably likely happen at some time. But it's one of those matchups that I just look at and I go, why derail one of these guys so early on? I mean, obviously, Curtis already has that loss against Francis Ngannou, and well, that does not a bad loss now when you look at Francis Ngannou and what he does. And this is a second fight for Adam Milstead in the UFC, coming off that win against De La Rocha last year. And you know, Curtis is coming off that win against Cody East. To me, it's just, it's a really odd matchup that the UFC put together here.
Yeah, there's probably more to be desired in terms of preserving your high upside guys in a division that needs high upside guys. But I think the thought process is there's only one A side here, and it's Curtis Blaydes. I don't know how high they are on Adam Milstead. With that being said, he has the ability to pull off the upset. He looks great against Chris De La Roca.
I would not call this an upset. I really wouldn't.
I mean, it's like a minor one when you look at the lines. I mean, it's not massive, clearly, but other than Alexa Grasso and other than Felice Herrig and Jessica Andrade, and I think maybe Beck Rollins, this is probably the widest odds. Oh no, Volkan's a pretty big odds.
I mean, my thing with Curtis, you know, if Adam's going to win this fight, it's him stopping the takedowns, which he was able to do against De La Rocha. De La Rocha, and obviously I'm not comparing De La Rocha's takedown abilities to Curtis Blaydes. But what you know, he did have to take on, you know, a lot. I think that if Curtis is going to win this fight, I think it's he gets the fight to the ground, and ultimately he wins via strikes on the ground. If this fight plays out on the feet, I like Adam Milstead to win, and Adam Milstead by TKO KO plus 500 is a very intriguing prop bet out there.
Yeah, you talked me out of it. I mean, Milstead's not a massive underdog. I just think Curtis Blaydes, I mean, the Francis Ngannou loss looks better and better in every passing day. I like him to win here, though. I do think the takedowns will simply be too much. Even if he doesn't get those initial attempts, he has the foundational skills to have success with that aspect of the game. And when he's on top of you, things are not fun. So I think Curtis Blaydes wins. But if Adam Milstead is able to put together the victory, I do think you're looking at a fight that doesn't go the distance. I think this is him cashing Blaydes and frustrating him by defending the takedown. The later this fight goes, I would slightly favor Adam Milstead just because I think Curtis Blaydes is going to expend a lot of energy attempting to bring the fight down to the ground.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up there. It's one of those fights that, to me, it's a straight-up coin flip fight. It's tough for me because I think if it ends early, it's likely Curtis Blaydes. If it ends late, it's Milstead. I think he will be able to, you know, kind of what you mentioned about, you know, Blaydes probably expending a lot of energy, but I guess I'll probably go Blaydes because I think I look at him being able to take this fight to the ground.
Yeah, that to me is
not confident, though. I'm not confident in that pick. There's a lot of these fights that I'm not confident on who's going to win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and for Curtis Blaydes, it's more than just winning. I think it's showing an improvement in what we've seen out of him a couple fights in. I do think he does need to add more to his game than just being your stereotypical wrestler with the nice credentials. He needs to improve his game. And if he does win, for people to feel optimistic about him, the development has to be evident. And Adam Milstead is, as you know, this hurts long term in terms of like matching these two guys up, but this is a phenomenal test for Blades.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that one. Also, that is the headliner of the FS1 prelims. Also in those FS1 prelims, you got Chaz Skelly and Chris Gutsmacher in a featherweight matchup. Ricardo Ramos makes his UFC debut against Michinori Tanaka, and Tisha Torres against Beck Rawlings. And on Fight Pass, you have Alex Morano versus Nico Price, a nice little matchup there. Khalil Roundtree versus Daniel Jolly, you know. Roundtree is probably, and I don't know why I'm this confident that he's going to get the win here, but I like Roundtree to win by stoppage in the first round.
Well, he looked really good in the very beginning of his fight against Tyson Pedro. The problem was the other portion of the fight. Look, Roundtree is a dynamite on the feet. Unfortunately, when an opponent attempts to engage with him with the grappling aspect of the sport, he has issues. But this is set up for him to look good. I'm kind of surprised he has another shot in the UFC, but it shows they have so much confidence in what he can be still. I think he wins there. My other two prop bets, by the way, Jason, would just be decisions. I really like Chaz Skelly to win by decision over Chris Gutsmacher. That's a plus 250. I think he uses his wrestling. And then I just simply think the Ricardo Ramos Michinori Tanaka fight goes the distance, so you get that at plus 110. I actually, that fight to me is my favorite fight across the prelims. Ricardo and Tanaka is a guy who was really awesome in the Japanese scene, looked okay so far in the UFC, and then Ricardo Ramos is one of the top bantamweight prospects in the planet right now, so that's a great fight.
Yeah, I mean, Ramos is a guy they wanted to sign last year, ends up losing, then he gets a win. And now I like Tanaka in that fight. I think he pulls it off. I like Chaz Skelly, Tisha Torres, Alex Morano. I like him to win by decision, which is a plus 318. So, you know, this will all go down on Saturday night, UFC Fight Night 104 from the Toyota Center there in Houston, Texas, of course, on the eve of Super Bowl 51. Let's just kind of end there. Who you like on Sunday?
Falcons, man. I like the Falcons. I worry about Shanahan looking at the San Francisco job, but I think the Falcons are being undervalued. Who do you like?
My heart is saying Atlanta just because I know a lot of people that work for that organization and would like to see them get a Super Bowl ring, you know, but the brain says New England. You give Tom Brady and Bill Belichick 2 weeks to prepare for a game. Yeah, I got to go New England.
Yeah, I mean, they have experience in the Super Bowl. I'll say that much. They are, you know, I think simply put, if the Patriots win, it's going to seem patently stupid for anyone to have picked against them. I just think that the Atlanta Falcons offense is kind of crazy in terms of how many weapons they have, although the Atlanta Falcons defense is not very good. So
their front seven's good, though. They got a good front seven.
They have a great outside
player. Unfortunately, the back four.
Yeah, the back four. I mean, the defensive tackle has some issues there in terms of the interior. But Vic Beasley's amazing.
But
that whole defense is 1 or 2 year players.
Yeah, I really think you're going to see the Patriots come out in a lot of 4 and 5 wide receiver sets. No backs in the backfield to spread that defense out. And you know, at the end of the day, you just hope it's a good game. You hope it's not a blowout. That's the last thing you want in the Super Bowl. You want a competitive game. And you know, do you have any routines for the Super Bowl? I mean, do you always do something in particular?
I just get a bunch of buffalo wings, hang out with friends, hate myself in the morning, and that's what we do. My question: how many mixed martial arts fighters will be in commercials during the Super Bowl? Will Ronda Rousey bathe her hair in Pantene in a Super Bowl commercial?
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna see Ronda Rousey in a Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah, is there any maybe Conor commercial?
Conor would be the only one that you would think of. Yeah,
yeah,
but I mean,
yeah.
If he was, that would have come out already.
It's a good point.
Maybe, you know, all that commercial inventory is, you know, that's been sold for months.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You know, I'll be sitting on my couch. Me and my wife will just sit on the couch, and we always get takeout food from somewhere. And usually I tell her, say, honey, I hope I'm not watching the Super Bowl with you next year. The first couple times I said to her, she kind of like, wow, that's mean. I go, don't you forget I work for a team and I hope we play in the Super Bowl. She goes, oh, okay. Now you don't look like an a-hole.
Yeah, you had to explain that joke before all that passive aggressiveness is perceived the wrong way.
Yeah, she gives you that look of like, wow, what? you're mean.
You're a real piece of work, Jason.
I can't do the whole pregame show. I just can't take that.
Yeah, because you know what?
I feel like we're both in the broadcast business. I feel for like the producers who have to work on putting together a, what, 5-6 hour pregame show?
Yeah, especially because these whole 2 weeks has been just one long pregame show on all the networks, has it not? So, yeah. I mean, what you're looking at, I mean, what's the ideal pregame show? Is it just, I feel like it's totally like, do go to Houston, go live, have celebrities on the whole time.
You're trying to find that untold story, but when you're talking about 2 weeks prepare for the game and, you know, 5 months, 6 months into the season, you know, kind of all the stories have been told. It's really hard to find that untold story that's not been told. I mean, that's the thing you're looking for with those type of stuff is find those stories. But yeah, I'll be looking forward to it. I can tell you this. I've done a couple of games there at NRG Stadium where the radio booths are. You are at the top of the building. It's like looking down at ants.
Wow.
I think it's in terms of the broadcast booth, I think that's the highest one in the league.
That's shocking to me. I would have figured maybe Cowboy Stadium.
No, Cowboy, the booth is like, it's like a suite. It's at the club level. You know, you're kind of like at the corner of the end zone, but I mean, it's Dallas has got to be the biggest booth that I've ever been in. It's huge. Well, you have your own bathroom in the booth. I mean, which is, I can't think of another radio booth I've been in that has a bathroom inside it.
Now, Jerry likes doing things bigger and better. It's going to be a lot of pressure in the city of Houston because I do think you're not going to have – I would be interested in the crowd.
Houston's one of my favorite cities to go to.
It's nice other than the traffic.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain cities I just look forward to going to. I mean, and Houston's one of them. We haven't done the game in Houston in a while. It's been a couple. We used to go there every other year for preseason. It was always like our last preseason game, which last preseason game is not exactly the most thrilling football action you see. But yeah, haven't gone there. I mean, but there's certain cities I'd love to go to. Kansas City's one of those, and that's just for the barbecue.
Yeah. You always talk about it, man. I'm always jealous, but.
I haven't started looking at next year's road trip. I know Green Bay's one of them. I just hope it's not like in December.
You can just get a big box of cheese deep fried. That sounds delicious.
I'll never forget. We went there a couple of years ago. It was the first day of hunting season. Half the crowd was in camouflage. And then one of my guys, we've got like the booth set up, and he goes, dude, you got to come see this. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, dude, there's a dead deer on top of a car. There was. I was like, wow.
Donald Cerrone attended the game.
Yeah,
that is crazy. Yeah, no, that is.
Yeah, Lambo's interesting. By the way, we'll wrap up here. I watched the 30 for 30 on the XFL. That was a good 30 for 30.
Yeah.
I know you were working on Thursday night, so you should check that out.
I will check it out. I mean, Vince McMahon was like Dana White on steroids, and that's just because all of Vince's employees were on steroids. But that league. Probably would have worked out, Jason.
Yeah, I totally forgot about the story where their second game, they lose power to their truck. And it comes out the whole reason they lost power, someone forgot to put gas in the generator.
That is amazing. Holy crap.
You're in television. You know kind of how that stuff works. Could you imagine being the guy whose job is to gas up the generator that powers the production truck?
That's definitely your last job. That's definitely your last job. And it's crazy because that was on national TV, right? That was on NBC.
Yeah, that was NBC Saturday night because the first game drew 54 million viewers. So they, you know.
Wow.
And, it's crazy. It's It's stuff like that when you're in the broadcast industry. We all kind of have those horror stories of something that went wrong. Because ultimately the reason, you know, when you're on the technical side of things, you're ultimately paid for when stuff goes wrong. How quick can you fix it?
Yeah.
That's really why we make the money we make.
Yeah, it's just like holding a ship together. And the goal is for no one to notice that it's breaking apart. That's all it is. You start and you just count down until the broadcast is over. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, but of course, UFC on Saturday night on FS1. The prelims, TV prelims of FS1 will start at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 7 o'clock local time there. In Houston, main card, 10 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. Of course, we'll be back to recap everything that happens on the post-fight podcast. Also, be sure to check out this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast, as one of my guests was Mike Russell, fellow MMA reporters. We talked about 60% of the World Series of Fighting being sold for $25 million. Yes, Daniel, someone thinks 60% of the World Series of Fighting is worth $25 million.
I wish I had a crap load of money.
My thought is, if someone thinks that's the World Series of Fighting for 60% of the company's worth $25 million, how much is Bellator worth? If you're Viacom, you're just going,
Yeah, dude.
Man,
yeah.
Do we start throwing some feelers out? To see, dude, if anybody wants to take this off our hands?
I mean, that is really astonishing, because when's the last time people watched a World Series of Fighting card in mass numbers? Was it like World Series of Fighting 3?
Well, I mean, their last one, which is on NBC, but yeah.
Their last one was on NBC?
Yeah, that was a New Year's Eve card. But yeah, when it comes to NBCSN, I was looking at their numbers. They've only had one show ever draw over 300,000 viewers. In terms of average. Okay. And pretty much everything is between 160 and 200K.
Oof. It's good to be in the sports media rights business. If you own a sports company and you want to sell the rights to broadcast it or just sell the company.
People love live content. Live content sells. So, but yeah. So people can check out that conversation I had with Mike Russell. Also, Adam Milstead's on the show as well. So be sure to check that out on RadioInfluence.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. So let's go wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report Preview Show, which you always hear on RadioInfluence.com.
Chef Brian Duffy here. I've got a new show called Duffified Live that's unlike anything you've ever heard. Each week, I'm going to be talking to some of my friends, some people I've never even met before. We're going to be talking about people that I meet on the road through some of my experiences. We're talking about restaurants, talking about great stories, great guests, wild adventures, the whole nine yards. Get Duffified Live with me, Chef Brian Duffy, each week on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.